Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Nick Augustine, and I'm here with Attorney Leslie Barrows of the Barrows Firm in Fort Worth, Texas, serving Tarrant County and the greater DFW Metroplex in family law, criminal defense, juvenile law, and estate planning. This is the Barrows Law Firm Review, which is a monthly internet radio show podcast featuring information about Texas law and events that affect families and the community of attorneys and professionals who serve them. Attorney Leslie Barrows is our featured guest today as she shares insight and information about domestic and family violence. For more information about the Barrows Firm, please visit barrowsfirm.com and find them on Facebook and Twitter using the handle Attorney Barrows. Don't forget to stop by the firm's testimonials page on the website and on LinkedIn and AFO.com. Today's show, again, is domestic violence, the South Lake and McKinney shootings, and we're here with Attorney Leslie Barrows. A few of the topics that we will discuss today include personal protection and safety when you realize there is domestic violence risk, safety and security during divorce and family law cases, and avoiding threats of violence. We'll ask, could a protective order help save the women in South Lake or McKinney? What about preventing domestic violence in the courtroom? And what steps can be taken? Also, responding to domestic violence and what to do if things go horribly wrong. Leslie Barrows is the principal founder of the Barrows Firm in Fort Worth, Texas, and her firm's main practice areas of family law, criminal defense, and juvenile law. Leslie is consistently challenged with dynamic cases and clients. When winning is what matters, many in the Fort Worth area go to the Barrows Firm based on their reputation and a winning track record over the past decade. Leslie Barrows earned her undergraduate degree from Sam Houston State University, and she earned her law degree from the Oklahoma City University School of Law. She is a member of numerous organizations, primarily focused in Tarrant County. For more information, you may dial 817-481-1583 for the Barrows Firm in downtown Fort Worth, Texas. By way of a general disclaimer, this is a general information program and the advice shared on the show does not constitute legal advice. Listening to our attorney guests cannot give rise to an attorney-client relationship. And if you have specific questions about any of our content on today's show, you can speak to an attorney by dialing 817-481-1583. All rights to this broadcast are reserved, and it's time to say good morning to Attorney Leslie Barrows. Hey, Leslie.
Good morning. How are you?
I am doing well. How are
you? Surviving the heat. Great.
Surviving the heat is good. It just, as long as I stay inside and don't go outside, because the humidity, I almost wish I could have like a tunnel between the garage and the truck. It's, you know, the upshot to all this is, though, the summer months for us here in Texas is getting the work done. Done time. Everyone's done with their trips. Well, some people are on vacation up in the north, but for those of us in the heat, it's time to get cracking and get work done. And one of the things that we do in getting work done is educating people and helping people learn. Unfortunately, sometimes we learn from tragedy. And we've had, unfortunately, too much tragedy lately. Blame it on the heat, blame it on relationships, blame it on human beings being messy people, but we have unfortunate news with the man accused of shooting his estranged wife in South Lake, the other man who shot the wife and the twin sister in McKinney. You know, we mm-hmm. look at these things and we say, how can we stop this from happening? Well, we can eliminate people, or we could focus on being proactive and doing everything we can, but, you know, sometimes there's nothing you can do, but we can certainly try, and talking about it is the first step. So when we're talking about domestic violence, I guess let's just jump into it. You know, personal protection and safety. How do you know when there's a domestic violence risk? And, you know, Leslie, as I ask you this, you know, we're also thinking in a world where we have all sorts of other threats of violence surrounding us, and everyone sort of looks at each other saying, are you the one? Are you the one? Who's going to flip out? We don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think with, you know, people with the gun control issue and thinking like, you know, controlling guns and who buys guns is gonna help us out. I don't know if that's really the answer. It's really people speaking out and making sure that it's known in the community of, you know, these kind of things happen, and learning from what's happened. But as far as protecting yourself and the safety, a lot of the people that I meet or I interact with, they've been in violent situations for years, and people don't know that that was happening in their home. And that's the scary part about domestic violence, is that it's not always physical, and there's not always going to be bruises, that it can be a lot of the you know, the verbal degrading and then using kids. So there's all kinds of issues with the domestic violence. And, you know, first, the first thing is for people to start speaking out, and family members, because victims are not always going to speak out, you know.
Well, they fear so many things. They may fear people not believing them. They may fear people saying, well, maybe it's somewhat your fault. They may not be supportive. They may think it's just messed up, and they may just turn the other ear because they don't want to get involved in the mess. But what are some things, I do feel very strongly about, you know, as you do as well, about this concept that domestic violence doesn't always include, you know, bandages and bruises. Let's talk about that a little bit more. How do you know whether, saying the dinner isn't cooked well enough, or the house isn't clean properly, or, you know, you're a lazy bum, you know, couples fight, people fight. What point is it domestic violence, and at what point should people say, this is not just spousal bickering?
Mm-hmm. Usually you're going to see the financial control, where you have, and most of it is, you know, females, but with other same-sex partners, you can see it as well. But it's just now coming to the forefront more so than, you know, in the past. But generally speaking, with, you know, a husband and wife, you're going to see the male controlling the finances. You're going to see, GPS tracking on your phone. You're going to have GPS tracking on your vehicle. When you're out somewhere that you're not supposed to, you'll get a text saying where are you? Even if you're, you know, taking the kids to Chick-fil-A, and you're going to get text messages. You're going to get emails. There's going to be tracking. There's going to be email monitoring. There's going to be monitoring on your social media accounts. So you're going to see all of that, and you'll also be moving around. You'll see that too, where they'll move every couple years, you know, and be more transient, because, you know, and if there is ever a concern where you have to go to the hospital or to get any kind of treatment, or you told a friend, all that's going to be downplayed, and then there's going to be threats to the children. And it's going to be through the husband saying, I'm going to, if you ever tell anyone, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill the children. I will take the children and you'll never see them again. All of those kind of different, different threats.
Plausible threats, credible threats.
Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have to have a gun. You know what I mean? It can be, I'll take you out. You'll never see, no one will ever know what happened to you. You know what I mean? And it doesn't require guns. It could be anything.
When we look at what you were talking about with all this control, it's really a control issue as opposed to a trust issue. Likely that person engaging in all those nefarious activities, GPS tracking, following, moving around, all the text messages, it's not that they don't trust the person, it's they want to control them. And the second they don't obey, we got a problem.
Right.
So what do you tell someone who says, you know, I want my husband or my partner or whoever to stop tracking me. Stop sending me all these text messages. Let's be adults. They're afraid to say anything to them.
Yeah, some people will seek, so, you know, they will go to a shelter or they'll go to safe haven or a women's shelter, but it won't be in near their community. It'll be further out if they ever get bold enough to leave. They will get a second phone, and the phone will be connected, like maybe get their parents to buy a phone for them or something along those lines to make sure that that second phone that the, you know, the person who the abuser is not, doesn't have access to it, changing passwords, having a backup, another pass, you know, another kind of email address, maybe, you know, it just kind of depends on the situation. Some ladies will get a second bank account just to, you know, just to be packed up and ready to go in case something happens.
Well, it's terrifying to think about doing that, because what if the other person finds out?
Right, and that's why a lot of times they stay for so long. And you know, the people that we're seeing in the news too, they've probably been trying to get divorced for a very long time, you know what I mean? And they finally get the courage to probably file for divorce, and they've been in an abusive relationship. Well, they've been trying to get out for a long time, you know?
Yeah, I wonder also too, you know, a lot of those folks who say, I've been talking to my friend, I've been talking to my sister or someone, and I have the courage, I'm going to do this. They go, they drive to the, you know, they're literally in your parking lot at the, you know, at the law office, and they get out of the car and they just turn around and they just drive right back home. They just chicken out. You know, I've seen it before where it takes people one, two, or three times to actually leave someone.
Yeah, and then also I've had people come to my office where they've already been followed, so they know that they're here, and also they can't write you a check or retain you because at the time they can't have it hit their credit card statement. They have to get the money or the cash from someplace else, and they have to, you know, they have to, if they have to retain you, then they have to start getting money from other things. Maybe they'll start selling stuff on, you know, online, just, you know, maybe some old kids' clothes, or just start accumulating money. And some people, you know, they don't have any family members here because they've been moved around so much. And so, you know, they want to get back because they're not going to, it's going to be hard for them to survive here without help, because you can't go get a job if you have small children and you don't have a caregiver, because the daycare is going to be so expensive. So it's hard to, without family help, to be able to leave the abuser.
All right, especially like you said, if the abuser has been moving you around, you may find yourself in the DFW area, but all your family is in another state far away, and you may not literally have access to enough money to even drive to get there, much less how do they send you money. I suppose there's Western Union and things like that. Where can someone, if they are, you know, in the process of doing this and fearful for their life, I suppose, can you talk a little bit more about those safe places like the shelters and what those are? You know, when we say shelter, it just sounds awful to so many people who especially have lived with a reasonable standard of living. To talk about a shelter like a, you know, in like a refugee situation just sounds awful. What could people expect, and what resources are there?
Well, there is a pretty new facility, One Safe Place in Fort Worth, that's been working with the victims of domestic violence, and it's a whole justice center, and so they have a variety of services there. There's also Genesis in Dallas. I know that a lot of ladies will go there, and the counselors are just great. There's the Women's Center. I believe that's in Arlington. There's different places, but in order to find the places, you're going to have to probably use a different phone or go to a friend's, you know, go a next door neighbor or a girlfriend's house to do some searching to try to get help. And also, you know, anytime you call the 911, you know, or the 211 number, you can get help as well. It's just getting to that point of making sure that this is the time and that you planned accordingly, because, you know, you don't want to screw anything up. I mean, some ladies now are, I think the lady that was killed in the town square, she had the gun, but, you know, she couldn't get to it fast enough to even be able to retaliate when the husband came and you know, killed her. So you know, if you're dealing with guns and you know that maybe your husband has guns, then you need to start hiding them or, you know, taking them or doing something with them to make sure that you have those out of reach if, in case something does happen.
Put spent or blank shells in them or something. But,
something, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, another thing that I think about, and I bet it's out there. I don't know, and maybe I don't know if you've heard about this either, but the concept of sort of an underground network or community. And I think back to a movie from the 80s, the Not Without My Child movie, where the woman goes to, you know, get her kid back, and she has someone looking for her, and, you know, there's other people set up and, you know, people with private homes. So they're outside of a sort of a public, you know, system or outside of an institutional type system. I wonder if there are, you know, underground networks like that to help people who are trying to flee an abuser.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I mean, they also have free clinics a lot of the places. You know, I know the Women's Center in Arlington, I believe maybe every Thursday they have one. I mean, there's different, it depends on, you know, where you live, but there's a lot of different resources. It's just, you know, how are you going to get there?
Right, exactly.
And the first thing, too, would probably be making police reports as well and trying to maybe get a protective order through the district attorney's office. If you have time, but sometimes people just have to do it so quickly that, you know, they come and retain their own counsel.
Right. And we're going to talk about what to do with the courts and how we can prevent some of these things in the courtroom and within the system. But first, at the half point on our show here, just wanted to ask you about what is new and exciting at the Barrows firm. I know that there's been a lot of new things going on, so why don't you let us know what you all have been up to.
Well, we're just trying to wrap up the school year, so that's been in the works. And I know a lot of people are coming in and talking about changing some orders, so we've been pretty busy with working and with trials. But this week, I know I'm speaking at the Fort Worth Paralegals Association tomorrow about juvenile law, just, you know, what to do in case someone calls you. So that's going to be pretty good. And then I know with the 4th of July weekend coming here in about a week and a half, I know we'll all be getting ready for that. But with mediations and trials was kind of what we've been focusing on.
How do you find the mediation work? I know that you've been doing a lot of that lately.
Yeah, the mediations, I think that it's a non-adversarial way to go in and say, okay, well, let's look at this marriage and divide up. I call it kind of a business transaction, and I'm not trying to be offensive to people going through a divorce, but in a way, as lawyers, we don't have to deal with all the emotions like our clients, but it's basically, okay, you're going to get this and you're going to get this and you're entitled to, you know, 50% of this. So I think people are stressed out about mediation going forward, but once they get there to the actual mediation point, I think they feel a lot better instead of going and bickering down at the courthouse about their personal lives.
Right. Well, and you know, you get to the point where you find out whether people really are concerned with the bottom line and moving on, or whether they are fixed to be tied to fight tooth and nail down in the dirt for the rest of their days. And some people, that is how it goes. But hopefully in that mediation process, more people can learn that, you know, nobody wins in a lot of those situations.
Right. For sure.
Right.
We don't. And so, you know, and I had one yesterday where it was a over 25-year marriage, and, you know, they were in shock that, wow, it only took a few hours to, you know, basically finalize their marriage and to start the new, you know, their new life without each other.
Right.
That's the hard part for people, you know.
Yep. It's never people are something. When I worked at a family law firm, you know, my first one right after law school, it was people are messy and situations are messy, lives are messy. We're here to clean up the mess and be the sponge. So,
right.
Moving back to the messiness of domestic violence, again, this is just never a topic we like to talk about, but it's important to talk about it. What, if anything, I mean, it's tough to say, but what could any of these people who, these unfortunate victims of these shootings in Southlake and McKinney, is there anything that they could have done differently? What could they have done by going to court to seek a protective order? You know, what types of things in the system could have been, you know, or did they do everything and still met their unfortunate fate?
Yeah, I believe that it was my understanding they had both filed for divorce and were going through the process. So if there was a protective order in there, because when you file a petition for divorce, you can actually apply for the protective order as well. And your attorney can do that for you. And then some people will go through and do the protective order first through the district attorney's office, whichever county you're in, and they'll get that for you. And but usually we would ask for a protective order if we can prove family violence. A lot of times, though, when you first meet with someone, I say, is there family violence? They say, well, nothing. I've never called the police, or it's not documented. I mean, there are ladies out there who have had broken, you know, ribs and arms and have never even reported that this abuse. So we just have to make sure that when you do file for divorce, that you also file for the protective order to make sure that, you know, you're not being harassed or you're not being threatened. But the problem with the protective order is, even though it's, you know, the best tool that we can use to protect you from family violence, we cannot guarantee your safety. So you're still, if you're out there and you're out there like the lady in Southlake at the town square, and I think the news reported she was leaving her her lawyer's office and decided to kill her, which is even, you know, that's terrible. She's trying to get help and trying to, you know, move on, and then she couldn't even be helped, you know.
Well, like they say too, when, you know, that you can put all the locks on your house, put all the bars on the window. If someone wants in, they're going to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately. Right, cameras and everything else, but, you know, what happens. So when you say that some folks don't have documentation of domestic violence over a period of years, how much of an uphill battle is that if you are asking for that protective order and you're just going on the testimony of the person asking for it?
That's the problem, is you don't have a neutral third party saying this happened, that an officer to call as a witness saying, hey, you know, this person hurt me, because people do lie. So for me, if I just have, it's harder when you just have the victim to testify. And that's going to be a question the husband's attorney would ask them is, well, why did you never do it again? Did you go to the hospital? Why didn't you go to the hospital? Well, are you sure this happened? And then they'd say, well, did you take pictures? I mean, that's the new thing, because everybody has a phone, right? So why didn't, or did you tell anyone? You know, are there any emails saying that you were hurt? A lot of times they're too scared, and that would be the follow-up question would be, you know, no, I never told anyone because my husband said he'd kill me and take me out, and I'd never see my kids again.
Right.
So
if they do, let's say they do have a bunch of text messages or emails between maybe siblings, and of course, you know, their sibling is not going to be a neutral third party, you know, that's subject to the other opposing attorney can cross them, I'm sure. But let's say that there's enough for the judge to issue that protective order. What does that protective order limit? What does that protective order say about carrying a weapon? Where they can go, what are the limits, what's the impact really of these protective orders? And then my follow-up is, what happens if they violate that protective order?
Well, what it is basically, on the protective order, it would be the information as far as the person who is protected. So if it's going to be the wife and children, then you're going to need to make sure that you get the protective order, include the wife and the children, not just, you know, the wife. You would also be asking for supervised or actually no access if you have a protective order in place to protect the kiddos. But you would not be able to go through to the person's employer. You can't go near any daycare or school of the children. You would the protective orders can be for 2 years, up to 2 years. You can't have a gun. So usually the firearm needs to be turned in to the police department. And then once that protective order is signed by the judge, it's issued to all law enforcement. So it's basically put into the law enforcement database. And so there's an alert that there's an active protective order if there's a domestic disturbance and she, you know, the wife has to call and say, hey, he's here, he's violating the order, he's on my driveway, you know what I mean, or he's, you know, near the kid's school trying to get him out of school. So
now I can imagine, what are the penalties if someone violates that, where they say, okay, I'm ordered to turn in my firearm, but I'm going to go get an unregistered, you know, weapon from something else, or, you know, because I fear for my safety aside from the protective order. What are some of the penalties for violating these? Just a slap on the wrist, or people going to do some considerable time behind bars?
Well, usually it could be a misdemeanor. So, you know, you're looking at, hey, I'm in violation, and then you have to go and report it and say, hey, he's in violation of the protective order, and the state would file a misdemeanor case for the offense of having the in violation. So it would be the first time you do it, it's a Class A misdemeanor, which is usually 1 year in the jail and then the fine of up to $4,000. But if you've done it several times, you've had several protective orders, and sometimes you'll see that where the husband's had multiple protective orders and maybe the cases have been dropped or the two-year mark has expired, then what happens is it could become a third-degree felony, which would be a 2 to 10 year prison sentence. But the kind of people that we're going to see, like the people we see on the news, I mean, this it's not going to be those people that do it all the time. It's just, you know what I mean? It's probably going to be these people who, oh, I have a protective order, and it could be a Class A misdemeanor. That's probably the more common, you know, violation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, again, the scary thing is just trying to detect who is the person who is likely to snap and, you know, take it to the next level. You know, I wonder too, between these situations where, you know, the South Lake and McKinney shootings, if the people had, you know, there's a long history of domestic violence or not, where, you know, that was, you know, it's hard to say who's actually going to take that final fatal step and who's not, but again, so important to get help. Just a couple more resources. I know you told us some earlier, but if you can just again, people who just want to get started in learning more about domestic violence, who can they talk to? How can they learn, again, while avoiding detection?
Yeah, I mean, they can definitely call and make sure that I would call either, I know there's Safe Haven, the Women's Center, those are in Arlington, Genesis and Dallas is a big one. Hope's Closet is in Collin County. I believe it's Hope's. And then I've heard, because I've been to several, you know, seminars about family violence, and I've been to Austin as well, and I know even the UT campus, they have a whole program dedicated to just victims of domestic violence, and they have clinics available. So even if you think, hey, I don't have the money to hire an attorney, you should still seek, you know, legal counsel. And sometimes people will do you a favor and say, hey, I have a friend, she may take your case. Cause I've done a few of those before where someone was at one safe place and they said, hey, can you help this lady out? She doesn't have a lot of money, and, you know, we would take it on just in order to make sure she was protected. But and you also have to understand that officers and judges now, I mean, they're trained on family violence. They have certain hours that they have to take annually to satisfy the requirement that they know what to do in case this, you know, you have people with that have suffered from family violence, that you know how to treat these people. Because when you're talking to females that have been abused for so long, you think that they, it's hard to understand. It's hard to communicate with them because their brain is functioning a whole different way than your brain. And so you feel like you have to repeat yourself a lot with them because it's almost because they're suffering from PTSD as well, kind of like some of our veterans, right? So You have to communicate with them. You have to tell them things so many different times, and you have to pump them up and say, you can do this. You know, we're going to try to help you. Because right. There's also a trust factor. Are you really going to be able to help me? Because we're worried. You know, I'm worried. I'm scared. I want to protect myself and my family.
Right. And I could see that propensity to just say, you know, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, you know, and do you really understand? You know, are we really communicating here?
And you drive to a fire department, drive to a police station. Any of those people are going to help you, I promise you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get you to where you need to go. If you're that scared, and then you pull in to the fire station, pull into the police station, do anything, you know.
People are set up to help. And, you know, and again, if you're looking for information, doing research, don't do it from the home computer. Go to a friend. Have your friend. The friend of the friend can find the information because, you know, there just may be It just may be too jarring for someone to, you know, you imagine someone who's already in such a bad situation and to go and look at a list of, you know, what to do on the internet. And, I mean, that's just the reality of confronting it, I think, is, I'd say probably the, well, I don't know, but I would guess that, you know, the anxiety of preparing to leave is probably much worse than the actual leaving itself.
Because they think that there's something wrong with them and they've done something wrong. They also worry that their kids will be taken by CPS because they've allowed abuse in the past. You see what I'm saying? That if there's domestic violence and you never told anyone, then you failed as a parent. But so a lot of ladies, you know, that's another reason why they're like, I'm just going to stay with what I have, you know.
Right. Well,
but,
you know,
and
that may work for
take
some,
you
but...
there.
Right.
I would have your friend take you to Genesis or take you to and make sure you have the kids in a safe place.
Absolutely. Again, ask for help. Leslie, if they want to know more or someone listens to this and says, how can you help me? What's a good way for people to get in touch with you?
Call 817-481-1583. Again, 817-481-1583. And our phones are answered 24/7. So if you have any questions or concerns or have a friend that is in need of help, please give us a call.
All right. Well, Leslie, I want to thank you for your time again today. And I want to also thank all the folks who listen to these podcasts, where they find them on the firm's website or they find them on the social media. Please share this information because it's such important information, and people don't always come out from underneath the blanket telling you that they have a domestic violence concern or problem, that they're being controlled, that these things are happening. People don't wear it like a sandwich board and walk around. So by sharing this information, you might literally be able to save someone's life.
Okay, have a great one.
All right, Leslie, thank you again.
Thank you. All right, bye-bye.
Bye.